Today in the town of David, a savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger. Luke 2:11 through 12. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and as it is the weekend of Christmas and Christmas Eve, get ready for another beautiful episode of Phil Gonzalez Ruins Christmas for you by talking about too many things, about the origins of too many things. This week's book is barely a Berenstain Bears book. It's a Berenstain Bears book in the sense that it contains the Berenstain Bears for one page, and the rest of it is mythological and historical figures drawn in the style of bears. That's right. This week's book, my friends, is a Christmas... It seems wrong to describe it as a Christmas classic. This week's book is The Berenstain Bears, The Very First Christmas by Jan and Mike Berenstain. Now, before we jump into this book, I want to address something, and that is the fact that I recently received criticism from a listener that I spend way too much time at the beginning of each episode talking about my camera setup and my hair and my hats and the way my room looks. And so I'm not going to do that today, except to say that if you're watching this on YouTube, I am facing in an odd direction. And the reason I am facing in an odd direction is because I have an enormous pimple on the side of my face, and I don't want to harass anybody with it. Like, I was looking at it in the, like, it's reflecting light in such a strong way that it was distracting me while I was looking at my video. So I'm just like, no, I'm absolutely not going to have my viewers look the pimple. For those of you listening at home, for the first time in your lives, you are at the advantage. You don't have to, like, ever accidentally see this enormous pimple on the side of my face. It hurts. It's bulbous. It's a nightmare. But we're letting that go. Why? Because it's Christmas weekend and that one listener doesn't want to hear me talk about it anymore. I'm not going to call them out by name, but they know who they are. All right. And we love them very much. Thank you for the constructive criticism. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ the Bear. So this is the Berenstain Bears, The Very First Christmas. And what a cheap out this is. What a cheap book this is. Not quality of illustration, certainly not quality of the story, but the fact that this is literally just, they took a couple of chapters from the Berenstain Bears storybook Bible and just reprinted them. That's it. It's literally, they took two chapters from the Berenstain Bears storybook Bible, like ripped them out, slapped a cover on it, took a couple of illustrations from that book, made it the intro to this book, and didn't even change. They changed one bit of wording at that, but that's it. Like, they needed a Christmas book. I'm sure Mike and Jan were like, we already have this. And in fact, this book came out, what year was this? This book came out in 2015. So, we had already lost Jan by this point. The reason I guess it's credited to Mike and Jan is because they originally wrote the storybook Bible together. So like this is just their words and their illustrations. So, and the layout and everything. The only thing that's changed is a little bit of wording at one point that gets changed, not for any reason other than I assume just clarity. It's a little vague. And if you're reading it to a kid, I can see them being like, wait, what do you mean? And the other thing that's a little vague is a little different is they take some words from one page and just move them to the next just for spacing reasons. And you lose the heading of the beginning of the next chapter because this isn't divided into chapters. They just mush it all together. Speaking of mushing it all together, that's what we're really going to focus on today. We're going to focus on the mushing, the mishmush, the mash of the story that we're covering. But what is the story that we're covering? Well, let's take a look into Bookland, Pennsylvania, where the Berenstain Bears exists. Join me there, shall we? Shall you? You shall. You have no options. Here we go. Hey, so this is a book about a bear reading a book. This is the entire plot of this book is The Cubs want Papa to read them something, and so he reads them the story of Jesus. Soak it in, folks. This is the only time you're going to see the Bear family. There's a picture of Papa Bear. On his lap sit Brother Bear, Honey Bear. Oh, no, wait. Honey Bear is sitting on his lap. Brother and sister are to either side of the easy chair. And he has in his hand the storybook Bible. A copy of the Berenstain Bear storybook Bible. And this is it. Like, this is the family. It says the Bear Cubs, they love to read their Bible stories. Papa likes reading it to them. It's Christmas Eve. He's like, time to get ready for bed. Want me to read you a story? And then brother's like, how about the story of the very first Christmas? And he's like, the very first Christmas it is. That's it. The end. That's the end of the plot. There is no more story. They never even show back up at the end. So enjoy and say goodbye, because like Christ, they have been assumed into heaven, I guess. There, you'll never see them again, unless you believe you'll see him again. But clock is ticking. So, what is this book? Like, why am I even bothering covering this? I'm not a biblical scholar. I don't know Jiminy Jack about anything. But I love talking about everything. And this book got me wondering. Like, so what, growing up, as if you know me, if you've listened to this show, you know that I grew up with no religious upbringing, except I was very much exposed to religion culturally, just sort of by osmosis. Like, there was never any, like, education about it because we were just expected to be it. That's the way things work in, like, generic Christianity. If you want to know what it's like to be a generically Christian person, you don't do anything. You just... because most of American society is just built around it. So you don't have to even think about it. It's kind of like Thomistic synthesis. Like, the symbology is the belief. There's no difference between what you see and what you experience. The communion wafer isn't standing in for Christ's body. The communion wafer is actually Christ's body, and the ritual is not standing in for the gospel. The ritual is the God. Like, it is the God. You are actually literally taking it into your body. That is what living as a generic American Christian is. You are it. It just is it. You look around and that's what you see, and that you don't even have to go to church, because the world is your church as far as you're concerned. Is Jesus exist? Why not? He's on TV all the time. Hell, the Pac-Man celebrating Christmas in 1983. Of course he must exist. Christianity must be correct. Why else would we have so many Rankin-Bass specials? That's the way it is to be a generic American Christian. It's not like that in every part of the world. There's places that are like predominantly Christian, but you still got to go to church. Like, but American Christianity, you don't have to do anything else. In fact, even if you are an atheist who's not raised anything, who grew up in a cave raised by wolves, people will be like, you go to church or anything? You're like, no, I don't know what a God is. They'll be like, okay, well, you're just Christian then. Here's a Christmas carol. Enjoy it. So the reason I bring this all up is because I grew up on, not on the Bible, I grew up on Bible stories, which, as we are about to discover, frequently have very little to do with the actual Bible. They are lifted wholesale from the Bible and presented to children as stories that stand on their own, as opposed to stories that are supposed to, like, be part of a grander narrative. And even if you have, like, a big book of Bible stories that are told in roughly chronological order, they're still so siloed because they usually eschew all the connective material that you could be forgiven, even if you read a book of 100 Bible stories, to not understand how it's all supposed to piece together. Whereas if you read the Bible itself, if you read the Torah, if you read the Gospels, if you read if you read the genealogies, if you read all the way up through until the apocalypse, you will see, well, I guess it depends on which apocalypse, the apocalypse of Daniel, the apocalypse of John. If you read all these stories closely, you can be like, okay, they all tie in. They're all quoting each other. They're all referencing back and forth to each other. They're all referencing back and forth to things that we don't even know what they're referencing back and forth to because we lost those books. But just remember that, like, a canonical set of Bible books wasn't, at the time that most of these books were written, there was no like actual people were fighting over cannons. Like they were not fighting like cannons, like cannons, but like they were fighting over what was canon. They were all using their different like books and ideas. Heck, the Gospels, early part of the church, Christianity, the Gospels weren't even a thing for a lot of those people. They didn't exist. Letters of Paul, the actual Pauline letters, he has to go out of his way, bend over backwards to be like, I didn't read this anywhere. This was told directly to me through revelation. Don't worry. I'm not one of them readers. I'm one of them dreamers and visioners, because that had more theological weight than anything you would have read, which is, of course, why the only thing Paul ever quotes is like the stuff he came up with out of his own head, because he didn't have this stuff. As far as Paul was concerned, Jesus was a whole different thing than like what we're about to get into today. Jesus was not a little baby boy who grew up in town and talked to people. Jesus was like this. I mean, it's up for interpretation, but like a lot of evidence points to the fact that Paul may or may not have even known about any of this. Because remember, Jesus came to him in a wow, kazang, I'm a Christian now. And the other apostles were like, good, us too. Why was Paul so high up in the church? Probably because everyone was doing it like this. In any case, the Bears are going to read a book, and they are not even going to get to the letters of Paul, because this is a very short chunk of the gospel. The gospels, not all of them, just a couple. Oh, wait, first we should go back, because what are we even talking about here? What are we doing here? Are we talking a whole gospel here? No, we're talking the infancy. The nativity. We're talking the nativity, not even the childhood of Jesus, just the nativity. The birth of Jesus is what people claim to be celebrating when they celebrate Christmas. The birth. Not even that big a deal. So not even a big deal, biblically speaking, Christianity speaking, that only two of the Gospels, there's four Gospels, if you remember correctly, only two of them, Matthew and Luke, mention this story at all. The other ones jump right into the really important part, which is like the John the Baptist stuff. Like the teachings, like the what is it called? Where you go out and you teach, forget it. Just that part of Jesus's career. But Matthew and Luke both want to tell the story of little baby born. Why? Because there's prophecies, right? There's important prophecies and predictions in the Torah. Well, for Matthew, scholars tend to look at these two different writers, whoever they were, as Matthew being very focused on the Jewish Christian church and Luke being very focused on the Gentile Christian church. And you can sort of tell by the way they like who they villainize, who they focus on, who they give credit to, because keep in mind that at the time, Christians were Jews. Like they were Jewish people. They were just Jewish. And this was just another sect of Judaism. They were like 30 some odd sects of Judaism, and like that we know of, and they each believed completely different things. Some of them didn't even believe in Torah. Like they were like, we got a whole other thing going on here. We figured something else out. There were all these different sects, all these different literally cults, not like cults in a negative sense, but they were cults that sort of formed in different communities based on different preachers, different rabbis, different teachers, different mythologies, and they disagreed. So Christianity's coming up, it's young, it's fresh, and nobody cares about it, like except the Christians. And some of those Christians, they're not even called Christians at this point, they're just Jewish. They were like, okay, there's this Jesus, he was predicted in the Torah. There was a Jesus in the Torah that was predicted to yada, yada, yada. So here we are. Got to keep following Torah, though, because now we're Jewish. So we got to do the Torah. So like the modern day Jews for Jesus, they're very close to what, not entirely close, but like more or less similar to what was going on back then. Just Jewish people doing their Jewish thing, being Jewish. And also there's this Jesus that, you know, there's this new sect. Fine, great. And so a lot of them were trying to convert other Jews to this new sect of Judaism. Matthew, one of them. Luke, on the other hand, was focusing on Gentiles, getting non-Jewish people to convert, because kind of hard to convert people who weren't already sold on it to this new way of thinking. And one of the ways you convert Gentiles to Christianity is you villainize the Jews, because that, why shouldn't I be a Jewish person? Well, this one's a lot easier too. You don't have to follow Torah. You don't have to follow any of those rules anymore. Unlike the Jewish Christians, you don't have to do any of that. And the big one is no circumcision. You don't have to do that anymore. That was like the big stumbling block for a lot of people. Judaism promised a lot of awesome things for people. Compared to a lot of the pagan religions at the time, Judaism offered a lot more freedom, gender-wise, a lot more freedom sexuality-wise. I know that, like, people think pagan, they think free living, man, we're out dancing with Pan. But that's not what that means. Pagan religions were just as conservative, just as enclosed, and just as strict in a lot of situations. It's not neo-pagans. This is like, just, these are religions and they're doing their thing. So Judaism promised a lot more focus on community, a lot more focus on justice, a lot more standing up to the man. Like, that was a big deal. People felt oppressed. That's one of the reasons they turned to religion. Here's Judaism, but there's this huge barrier to entry. It's called having to go to school. It's called having to learn things and then having to get circumcised. Pretty big deal. So then Christianity comes along and it's like, well, we're going to offer you the same thing. We're going to offer social justice. We're going to offer standing up to the man. We're going to offer more or less equality. Like, everyone's going to heaven, man. Everyone's going to get it theirs in the afterlife. Not so many rules. And you don't have to get circumcised. And you don't have to even know how to read, or you don't have to talk to anyone. You don't have to talk to anyone. You just, divine revelation, boom, we're Christian now. Come on, everyone join in. So that was kind of the thing. One of the little many things. It was easy to sell. Easier sell at this point. So we have Matthew who's focusing on the Jews. We have Luke who's focusing on the Gentiles. Never the twain shall meet. Like, literally, never the twain shall meet. Why? Because they're telling two completely different stories of the birth of Jesus. And I think it's funny that a lot of people ignore this fact or don't even know this fact. The fact that the Gospels tell completely different stories of the birth of Jesus, that they sound similar until they're not. And that's where this book comes in, because you can't, most children's books that tell the story of the Nativity just sort of mush them together, just sort of mush-mash these two not only very different stories, flatly contradictory stories into kind of an uber narrative that doesn't work, that isn't one or the other. It's just kind of the best bits, or the more cinematic bits, the parts that are easy to tell. But a lot of the stuff that's famous, that the famos really like, isn't in one or the other. And the points of view are completely different. And the main character in each one is completely different. What do I mean by that? I mean, Matthew's main character is Joseph. Luke's main character is Mary. That's about as different as you can get. And why do I mean main character? I mean the focal character. Mary does so much in Luke. She's barely mentioned in Matthew. Like, she's there. She's like the catalyst, but she's not the main character. She's not taking a lot of action. She goes, like, she's related to like John the Baptist's sister in Luke. And that's not even mentioned in Matthew. That's not even like a thing. But she has this whole story, like Luke has like the birth of John the Baptist paralleling the birth of Jesus. It's like this whole, like, because they're like the two guys on top, right? And there's John the Baptist, and then right above him is Jesus. And they have this whole meet cute, and it's really awesome. And Matthew's like, we're not dealing with that. Like, that's not the prophecy we're dealing with. We're not focusing on that. We're focusing on Joseph, because he's the direct lineal descendant of King David, of Adam. And we need to focus on Joseph. And Joseph is named after the other Joseph, who was the king of dreams. So therefore, we're going to have to focus on this guy's dreams. He's like a rebirth of Joseph. He's the prophet. He's the dreamy guy. Two big dreamers. One of them is Joseph in the Torah. One of them is Joseph in the Gospels. And they both have dreams that come true and lead to a new nation, more or less. So what are we talking about here? What's this book? What's this gospel? Maybe I should just walk through it as we go. Sorry, I'm trying to push the right buttons here, and I keep pushing the wrong buttons here. So the way that the Berenstain Bears tell the story is that there's this woman named Mary. She lives in Nazareth. An angel comes down and is like, look, you'd be blessed. You're going to have a baby, and you're going to name it Jesus. He's going to be called the Son of the Highest. And she's like, look, I'm not even married. How can I have a baby? And he's like, eh. And that's pretty much it. That's the way they tell the story. He's like, with God, nothing's impossible. And Mary gets down on her knees and, like, prays to this angel. Or it's like, oh, I am a servant of the Lord. That's the more or less. I just realized that I didn't put the actual book up. So let me just run through this again real quick. It's literally two pages. I've got a lot going on. I've got a lot going on. So yeah, so the angel comes to Mary and is like, you're going to have a baby. It's going to be named Jesus. She's like, I'm not even married. And he's like, don't worry. God can do anything. And she's like, I am a servant of the Lord. This isn't really what happens in either version of the story. So this version of the story says that there's this woman named Mary in the city of Nazareth. And that's based on the fact that in the Bible, it says that they refer to Jesus as a Nazorean at one point, which was kind of like retrofitted into him being from Nazareth, which isn't like you wouldn't. There's just a lot going on. That's not what you would call a resident of Nazareth. Nazorean could have meant something else. Could have meant, there's a lot of like different ideas of what it could have meant. But the writers were like, I guess he's from Nazareth. I guess that makes sense. They'd be like, Joey's a Boston. He loves eating Boston baked beans. And they're like, I guess he's from Boston. Like, that's kind of like the same thing. Like, oh, these words are the same. I mean, I guess Boston baked beans are named after the actual Bob. I don't know. In any case, it doesn't mean he's from Nazareth. It doesn't necessarily mean he's from Nazareth. But in any case, Mike and Jan go a long way to pointing that out. Whereas in the Gospel of Matthew, kicks off in Bethlehem. Gospel of Luke kicks off in Nazareth. And they go to Bethlehem. Now, here's the thing. Gospel of Matthew firmly establishes this takes place in Bethlehem of Judea during the time of King Herod. Right? Not the King Herod you're thinking about, not the song and dance Herod, the other Herod, another Herod. There's so many Herods in the Gospels, but during the time of King Herod. Luke starts it off in Nazareth and says that they have to journey to Bethlehem during a census under the Emperor Augustus and Quirinius, the governor of Syria, which that doesn't make any sense because that establishes... So King Herod, the Herod they're referring to, Herod the Great, died in 4 BC. The census of Quirinius, historically, took place in 6 CE. So there's a 10-year gap there. Remember that. Because you can't have one and the other. And the only way to justify those is to make up facts. To redefine what it means to be a governor. To redefine what it means to be Herod. To redefine what it means to die. Like, there's people who bend over backward to try to justify these two things. They're unjustifiable. These two authors were telling two different stories for two different reasons and setting Jesus' birth in two different places to justify several different prophecies. Several different things mentioned that their different audiences were going to expect to be fulfilled. So just keep that in your mind. Quirinius, Herod, totally different things. There's a lot to look into too about, like, I think it's like Judea and like what it meant to be a governor at the time and where that, like, it wouldn't have made, a Roman census wouldn't have made sense in areas that were not actually controlled by Rome. You were a governor of an area because it wasn't directly controlled by Rome. It was just like sort of an object, a branch of Rome, but it wouldn't have been subject to a census. There's a lot going on there. In other words, the gospel authors were doing a lot of like creative thinking in order to fit things into expectations of the readers in order to make Jesus fulfill these various predictions and prophecies. In any case, the big thing I'm going to point out here, though, is that in Matthew, okay, in Luke, an angel comes to Mary before she conceives, and he's like, hey, you're going to give birth to a baby, and you're going to give birth to the baby, and it's going to be called Jesus. Well, he doesn't really say, does he say Jesus? Let me just see. Gabriel. Well, Gabriel. Sorry. Where is it? Where is it? I'm looking in Luke. There's a lot going on because Mary spends a lot of time hanging out with John the Baptist's family. Let's see. Yes. And so Mary gets told that she's going to give birth by this angel. And she's like, oh heavens, I'm not ready for this. That's in Luke. In Matthew, Joseph has a dream, and he dreams that an angel tells him. So the way it's set up is that Joseph is engaged to be married to Mary, but she gets pregnant, but they didn't have relations. And so it says that Joseph's an honorable dude. He's not going to make a big deal out of this. He's going to quietly divorce her. It says that in Matthew. He's going to divorce her. He has a dream. Angel comes to him and says, don't divorce her. This is the Holy Spirit's baby. She didn't screw around on you. You gotta stick with her. And he's like, okay. So this is Joseph's. He's established as the central character here. Why? Again, because the important thing is that he's a descendant of King David. He can trace his lineage all the way back to the beginning by the angel of the Lord coming to Joseph. Jesus, the baby that's going to be born, is going to be a direct descendant of Joseph. Like he's becomes the honorary father, making the lineage complete, right? Like that's the way the story is telling it. Also, the story, Matthew's version of the events is purposefully paralleling the story of Moses, by the way. It's a retelling of Moses. We got some differences. So they head out. Two different groups of people are alerted to the birth of this new baby, right? In let's take a look and see what happens in the Berenstain Bears book. Make sure I'm on the right thing. Yeah, I'm on the right thing. So they head on out. This Mike makes sure and points out that there's a census going on. Everyone in the Holy Land has to be counted and put on a list. So you got to go to your hometown to be counted, or the hometown of the guy, the head of household, I guess is how it works. This also is nonsense. This is not a thing. It wouldn't have made any sense. Can you imagine if a census, can you imagine what this would do to like the local economy? If every single person had to pull up stakes and travel to their land of birth in order to be counted for no reason, like we're not trying to figure out who lives, like, I think the point of a census is to figure out who lives where. This could be for tax reasons. Doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make sense. Can you imagine if everyone had to go to their hometown just so they can stand in line and be counted? Doesn't make sense. Any case, they have to get them to, this is Luke's way of getting them to Bethlehem, because it also says that Jesus was born in Bethlehem, but also that he's a Nazarene. So they have to like, he's finagling the story in order to make everything line up. Even though Mary is great with child, they're riding it on a donkey. Here we go. They have a baby. Now there's a lot of contradictions and discussion over where Jesus was born. There's several places that claim to be the birthplace of Jesus. Belief for a long time was that he was born in a cave, because that is what our supernatural heroes tended to be born, in places like caves. The whole idea of like the virgin birth, the whole idea of like being turned away at the end, the whole idea of, people being after the baby, like all this is fairly common heroic storytelling at the time. Especially it was this is how you beefed up your main character, is you sort of hit these points. They were expected. It's a good story. It makes a lot of sense. Like Joseph Campbell thought he had something with like the hero's journey. That's nothing. This was the original hero's journey, as far as like your religious iconic leader. This is, you know, going back to Romulus, like had the same deal going on with him. Like, and there's many parallels between all these different characters, including Jesus, throughout this story and throughout the Gospels, depending on who's writing it and what story they're trying to tell. Jesus gets born in a manger. If you notice, though, there's none of this like the angry innkeeper stuff like that. Like a lot of that was added for like children's books and pageants later, like to give kind of a villain to this part of the story. There's no room in the inn. But the Gospels, Luke just kind of brushes past that. Like there's no room. don't even know if it's an inn. Like, that's an interpretation of the word that's used, but it could have been anything, a house, a private home. Could have been just someone. People were like, is there any place for us to stay? She's pregnant. She's going to have a baby. And they were like, I got a pretty nice barn. And they were like, great. You know what? We've been traveling for days. We're on the back of a donkey. Right now, a barn, it's probably that era's equivalent of like a La Quinta Inn. Like, it's not great, but you got a place to sleep and have a baby. Surrounded by animals, just like in a La Quinta Inn. So they have the baby. She wraps him in cloths. The animals are munching down. There's a bunch of cute kittens because the Berenstains love drawing cute kittens. It's warm and dry. Everyone seems cool. Okay. So the next picture is one of the most famous pictures in Berenstain Bear history. It is the shepherds watching their flocks when the angels come to them and tell them to be not afraid. Look at our biblically accurate angels. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an actual wheel of angels. We have a wheel of angels appear in the sky, form a giant wheel in the sky of bear angels, which I love. I adore the bear angels, freaking out the shepherds. And the shepherds, they look afraid. Like, they genuinely look terrified. There's this thing floating in the sky, and it's terrifying. I don't know how else to say it. It's terrifying. So the angels come up. They're like, don't be afraid. There's a guy who's been born. His kid's been born. Christ the Lord. You're going to find him in a manger. And the shepherds are like, glory be to God. Oh, no, the angels say glory to God, peace on earth. And that's the big, like, oh, come all ye faithful type thing. Joy to the world, the angels we have heard on high thing. The shepherds are minded their own business. And this, the freakiest of supernatural occurrences occurs. And, I mean, I'd probably be throwing up myself. However, there's also this thing about wise men. After Jesus was born, Mike writes, three wise men came from the east to the holy city of Jerusalem, and they asked, where's the child who's born a king? We've seen his star, and we followed it to worship him. Now, let's go back to the actual Gospels. So, wise men and shepherds are not in both Gospels. The shepherds are from Luke. They're directed by angels to where Jesus is born. In Matthew, there's this whole game. So in Matthew, there's the wise men, these magi, as they're known. They come out of the east following a star. The wise men were basically astrologers, fortune tellers, just sort of like your precursor to astronomers. They watch the stars constantly, and they're like, hold on, there's something going on here with the stars. Now, following a star doesn't mean necessarily that there's like this giant glowing star that they're following. They're following their astrological charts, basically. They're like doing their, like calculations and being like, we're going to go this way. This is where the stars are telling us to go. By the way, this is sorcery. This is forbidden in the Bible. However, exceptions must be made. Also, there's not three wise men. There's just wise men. They just show up and they find Herod. And they're like, hey, we're doing the math here. And it's saying that there's a kid who's been born around here who's going to be the king of the Jews. And Herod's like, I can't have that. Like, what? Absolutely not. Go find this kid. And so the magi, the wise men, they head off. They follow their charts. They follow the stars. They find Jesus. At this point, he's not in a manger anymore, by the way. This is much later. Like, he's been born. They do the math. They travel from the east, find Jesus. There's not three of them. They do bring him gold and frankincense and myrrh. It's not like one wise man is like, here's my gold. And one of them's like, here's my frankincense. No, they just, amongst other things, the big deal is that they've brought gold and frankincense and myrrh. Why? Because one is gold, but you're a king, you're crowned king. Here's your gold. Is frankincense the thing you anoint a king with? And then myrrh is like you anoint a dead body with. Basically, the point is we're giving you, it's symbolic. We're giving you things to say you're the king, but also that you are a walking dead man. Like, you're a corpse. You're going to be sacrificed. Sorry to tell you this about your kid. It's symbolic. What do the magi bring in Luke? Nothing. They're not in Luke. Why? Because Herod's not a part of this story. Why? Because we're dealing with something totally different here. We're dealing with the census. Quirinius. We're not dealing with Herod. It's not, that's not the, he's not in it yet. But it is a big difference. Herod is like, we got to find this baby. Just kill all the newborns. Kill all the newborns. That worked out really well in the Moses story, remember? Worked out really well. So where were we? Sorry, I got really excited. So everyone's like, hey, the new king is born. The magi show up for Herod. And he's like, what, a king? What? So they follow the star. They get there. They give gold and frankincense and myrrh. Mike says gold and other precious gifts. The frankincense and myrrh, Mike, pretty important. I don't know why you left that out. I like that he didn't go with the we three kings thing. These aren't kings. They're just wise bears. And they're just dressed like travelers. They're just wearing traveling clothes. And they're not, so not crowns. This isn't Melchior, Balthazar, and Caspar like you see in the children's pageants. All that was come up with later. That's all later writings. Just further mythologizing the story. And what I appreciate that by the time the wise men get there in Mike's version, they're not in the manger. They're in a house, just chilling. Jesus is a little older. He's sitting up. And they bring him what looks to be a box of delicious cookies. I assume this is the gold, but it looks like they're giving him just some delightful, delightfully fresh baked cookies. And then the end. I mean, it does say that Joseph has a dream, which is, of course, not in Luke, where the angel warns him about King Herod. They flee to Egypt until Herod dies. Then they go back to Nazareth. And that's where Jesus grows up. Literally just ends right there. There's no like, well, that was a great story. Thank you, Papa. And Merry Christmas. Nope. That's the end of the book. The book just ends. Last page, you see Joseph sleeping, having another dream. Why? Because the Bible, the storybook Bible actually does go on. Like, it goes on with the rest of Jesus' story. They've added a sentence. They've added, and that is where Jesus grew up. Because the actual page ends with they went back to the town of Nazareth in the Holy Land. And so this is Matthew. In Matthew, the family flees to Egypt. And then they return after Herod's death. And in Luke, it goes into Jesus's like early childhood. He's being presented at the temple, his childhood in Nazareth. But none of that carries over. None of that is from Matthew. And then, so what we see is that Matthew is very much about the fulfillment of prophecies, the role of the Magi, the escape from Herod's persecution. It's very much retelling the Moses story. It's very much setting up for Jesus to be the sacrificial lamb. It's very much setting this up, Jesus's whole life, to be a retelling of the Yom Kippur and of the Passover narrative and. You know, sort of telling the Jewish faith like in microcosm as this one guy. Jesus is going to fulfill all the stuff that like was supposed to have been fulfilled before, yada yada yada. Luke, on the other hand, is like, no, I'm talking to Gentiles here. They don't care about any of that stuff. There was a miracle conception. The shepherds, who we all love, they're working class, right? We love the shepherds. And then it goes on, and all this stuff about Simeon and Anna and the family of John the Baptist. We're setting all that up because you guys are really into John the Baptist, right? And then that's it. So but the big thing is the 10-year gap. These are two different narratives that serve two different purposes, and they flatly contradict each other. What I'm saying is somebody's lying, or was lied to. One of these stories is made up. They can't both have happened. They can't both exist at the same time. There's such a discrepancy. I'm not trying to pick this apart to be like, you see? I'm just saying that when you take these two stories, okay, here's my point. Here's why I get it worked up about it. I'm very excited about it. When you take these two separate stories that have two different audiences in mind, two different points, two different arcs, two different protagonists, and you just kind of cram them together and try to like make like a greatest hits out of them, you get a narrative, but you lose the narrative, you lose the point, you lose the message. And I can see where you can be like, well, I don't want kids to be like be faced with these two contradictory stories, to which I say, give kids the contradictory stories. Write a book of the first Christmas that tells both versions, that says, you know what? The Bible has two different, they're going to find out sooner or later. Start them off young and be like, the Bible has two different versions. Why? Because the writers were writing to different people. And if the kids are like, well, then which one's true? If you are the kind of parent who is like, I don't want to get into all that with my kids. Tough. That is kids. Your kid's going to find out on the streets if they don't find out from you that the Gospels flatly contradict each other left and right. Were written at different times by different people who had different ideas about what Jesus was. And this is the beginning. You may as well start them off with the truth. But I don't want my child to question their faith. I don't want my child to question the accuracy of these stories. I don't want my child to question the truth of these stories. Tough. That's part of religious education, man. And if your kid ends up being like, I don't buy it, your kid ends up being like, I don't buy it. We're talking religion here. We're talking the birth of not only this character, Jesus, we're talking the birth of a movement, the birth of a revolution, the birth of a new religion, of a new sect, of a new cult that was in its birth, still in its birth pangs when these stories came out, was still trying to figure out what it was. And, you know, unfortunately for us, unfortunately for people who love to learn about this stuff, to read about this stuff, once they codified what they considered to be the main stories, anything that contradicted those, that brought them too much into question, they just got rid of. There's so many gospels, so many infancy narratives, so many nativity narratives that we just don't have anymore. Because people believe different things and were pursuing, you know, Christianity could have branched off in so many directions. But, you know, certain emperors became Christian and, you know, certain kings decided this was the truth. And then they put a rubber stamp on it and said, this is it. Here's what it is. But at the time, they were still trying to figure things out. And that's what we're seeing here is two people with different goals, different ideas, trying to figure things out. And whether or not you believe in any of this, whether or not you're Christian or not, I find it fascinating because it's a peek into the heads of people. It's a peek into, I don't find divinely inspired text fascinating, but I do find human written text fascinating because people are people. And as they say, one of my favorite sayings in the world is, the thing about people is that people have always been people. Right? And we've always been people. We've always acted like people. We've always done the same weird things that people do. And to me, the Gospels and the letters of Paul, particularly the weird novel that is the Acts of the Apostles, all of that is just so much about people being people and writing what, trying to figure out the way the world works, trying to figure out what they want people to know, and try to navigate starting a new religion. So that's it. This is my very un-Christmassy Christmas episode. It's about the Berenstain Bears, the very first Christmas. Do I recommend this book? Get the Storybook Bible, honestly. This is in it, and you can read it from there. I think the Storybook Bible is better. It's big. It's hardback. It's a nice big format with beautiful illustrations. I'm never going to just cover the Storybook Bible because it would literally be 18 hours long and just me like poring over like texts and people's graduate theses and like books about the stories. And I don't have that kind of time. But do your own reading. Do your research. Read graduate theses. I love graduate students because they write from the heart and they do a lot of hard work. And then you can write to them and say, hey, I read your graduate thesis because I do a show about cartoon bears and I wasn't able to use really much from it, but I just wanted you to know that I read it. You know what people love hearing? That some rando read their thesis. I've discovered that in my research for It's Del Toro Time, in my research for Pizza Toast. I've read graduate theses from far and wide. I've read papers written by just college professors. Who just, you know, publish or perish. So they publish and then I read it and I'm like, I just want you to know that we have this goofy little podcast and I used some of the information from your thesis or your paper or this like public random publication that you wrote 5 years ago. And I just wanted to say thanks for the hard work. And boy, oh boy, do they love knowing that somebody out there is reading their stuff. So so that's it. I guess that's the Berenstain Bears, The Very First Christmas by Jan and Mike Berenstain. It's cute. Maybe buy it. The cover's nice. It looks good. It's got some beautiful. It's cute. It's got Jesus in it. He's a bear. What? What else do you want? It's got the ring of angels. Read it. This is the last time you're going to hear from me before New Year's, right? 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. No. When's my next episode? If this is the Saturday before Christmas, then my next episode is the 30th. So you will hear me before the New Year. I'll do something for New Year. How about that? Otherwise, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. This went on a lot longer than I thought it was going to. I thought I'd be in and out of here in 15 minutes. Boy, was I wrong. But thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for putting up with the weird angle I'm at today. If you celebrate Christmas, have a good one. If you don't, have a good day. We're going to go see The Boy and the Heron. So that's our Christmas day. Otherwise, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. And I'll see you all next time. Deep in Bear Country.